You're listening to Dr. Tony Nader, the podcast, dedicated to exploring the full potential of human physiology and mind, with focus on ancient and modern techniques of self-development. Spend some time with Dr. Nader, who is leading the way in the science of consciousness, and begin your journey to better understanding the relationship of mind and body, consciousness, and physiology right now.
Hello, listeners. Welcome to TAL Radio, powered by Touch a Life Foundation. This is your host, Pavitra, and today we are going to take you through a journey of consciousness and holistic well-being. The Atreya Upanishad says consciousness is the ultimate reality. And today we are having the honor of exploring this quote with the highly accomplished scholar, Dr. Tony Nader. Dr. Tony Nader is a distinguished physician, neuroscientist, and a globally renowned Vedic scholar. Trained at prestigious institutions like Harvard University and Massachusetts Institute of Technology, Dr. Nader's journey spans across the realms of modern science and ancient wisdom. With groundbreaking research on consciousness and its integration with physiology, Dr. Nader's work has bridged the gap between science and spirituality. From TAL Radio, we extend a warm welcome to Dr. Tony Nader.
Thank you, Pavitra. Thank you for TAL Radio and the Touch a Life Foundation for having me.
Thank you so much for agreeing to this interview. And there is so much to talk about when it comes to you, because you have accomplished so much in various fields. So be it in medicine, be it in science, be it in Vedas, you have really tried to understand it to the maximum extent that a human can. And having that kind of a caliber, there is no limits to the amount of questions that we can, you know, ask to you. But I would first like to, something which has piqued my interest in the recent time, is that there is so much of talk regarding, and there is so much of conversation regarding mental health. There is so much of conversation regarding how meditation is good, and a lot of people are taking to it. And so many of meditation apps are coming up, platforms are coming up. And transcendental meditation is something that has been there for years. And you have been in this field for more than four decades, I believe. And I would like to know, how is transcendental meditation enduring through so many years? And what is it in transcendental meditation that sets it apart?
The name already describes the basic importance and difference of transcendental meditation from any meditation, because it is transcendental, which means it takes us beyond. That's what to transcend means. It's to go beyond. And meditation is almost a generic name now that can be any kind of mental activity. You know, you can think of subjects, objects, you can think of philosophy, you can sit and reflect on your life, you can examine your breathing quietly, settled in, you can examine your thoughts, you can take your thoughts and your mind in different directions. You can try to focus and concentrate on objects. You can even, you know, some prayers and trying to feel in the right direction, thinking about what life should be and surrendering to the divine. So all of these values have been put together as meditation in a sense, because it's all that deals with the mind. Transcendental meditation deals with the mind, but more profoundly, it takes you to consciousness, to the basis of the mind. So we separate or differentiate awareness and consciousness from simply that part of our awareness and consciousness which carries thought. And that part which carries thought, we call it the mind. But, you know, there is feeling, there is sensation, physical sensation, there is intellect, analyzing and discussing, that are also part of different ways consciousness expresses itself. So if we really want to understand the difference, we can imagine that the mind is, or awareness is, like an ocean. And this ocean has waves on its surface. And as you go deeper into the ocean, the waves settle down, settle down, settle down more and more. the thoughts that we have are like bubbles coming from the bottom of the ocean and rising up until they reach the surface around where the waves are. And this is when we experience a thought. I say, I have a thought, but I don't know where the thought comes from. However, there is a technique, and that is transcendental meditation, that allows us to go to the source of thought, to that place from which all creative thinking, all thinking, whatever it is, even, you know, on some surface level, they can be stress thinking, that can be fear thinking, they can be emotions, they can be analysis, they can be like that. All of these values can be on a surface value and can be on a more settled value. So transcendental meditation allows us to transcend, to go beyond the surface values and go to our inner deep self, experiencing pure consciousness, which means a state of awareness in which we are fully awake, fully alert, yet there is no thought, there is no sense of feeling or no sense of sensation. We transcend everything, we go beyond everything, and we experience the ultimate reality, what we call the ultimate reality, and that is pure consciousness. In the Vedic tradition, it's called Atma or pure awareness. So it is the self of everything, not just Ahamkar or the ego, the sense of myself, but we transcend even that and go to the sense of being, pure awareness. And what happens with this is a huge number of things, because we are settling down like we settle in the ocean. The mind settles down, the body settles down. And what we have found is that all stresses and strains and problems and obstacles that have accumulated throughout the years or maybe even past lives, they get dissolved. And we go back to a state of natural well-being in touch with what we call our true inner self, pure consciousness. So the results are very profound on the surface level, which means less strain, less stress, better health, better behavior. Students have better grades at school. Artists have better quality of performance. Scientists, they discover new things. And behavior improves, and even society improves, because we are reaching the source of all that there is, which is our pure consciousness.
That's a beautiful answer, Dr. Nader. And in continuation with that question, there is something that I wanted to ask you, which you had talked about in one of your previous interviews. You just said about how having the awareness, being in touch with your consciousness, is beneficial to each and every human being. And there was something that you had answered regarding Maslow's hierarchy in a previous interview, which I happened to view. And in that, you were talking about how transcendence was also one of the components of self-actualization towards the end. And for me, the question is, now as a human being with having numerous amount of pressures and problems and, you know, having a day-to-day obstacles. So for someone, it might be a hunger or shelter. For someone, it might be something in their environment which is not allowing them to progress. So to tackle all this and getting to a level of self-actualization, doesn't it take a bit of time to get there?
Yes, some time is needed, of course. And we have to give it the time, the normal time of meditation, which in this case is only 20 minutes morning and 20 minutes evening. So transcendental meditation requires only sitting comfortably in a chair and for 20 minutes in the morning, 20 minutes in the evening, investing into this diving within. And so the time required is very small compared to what we have to do during the day. But the time that we gain from it is enormous, because we then have more effective time. So time is relative. If you are spending all your time being worried and not able to focus and looking for something, and your mind is thrown around, then you're using poorly your time. If mind is clear and the intellect is sharp and the awareness is broad and can see long-term and broad perspective, then you use your time in the most effective way. So in fact, this investment of time helps to actually improve time rather than use time. And in terms of Maslow, you know, as I've said before, but we can repeat, you know, if somebody has anxiety, has hunger, has high blood pressure, has problems, etc., or is looking even to ensure the basic needs of survival, what is very important is to realize that they can do that from different levels of intelligence, different levels of understanding. So if one is very deeply transcendent and is clear in their mind, they will be able to find solutions even for basic needs such as finding food, deciding about one's relationships, deciding about one's education, you know, survival instincts and all of that. We have that huge potential in our human mind and brain and capacity nervous system. And if we say, first, I have to find a way to eat, and then I start thinking to be more clever, more intelligent, more creative, as Maslow, you know, gradually thought, that wouldn't be the most efficient way to do it. The best way to do it is first improve your full potential. So put your time to make yourself the most effective possible, and then go out and create in a very effective way all the means that you need, not only to survive, but also to have good relation, grow in self-actualization. That will be like reversing a little bit the order, but it's not. It's really, you have a huge potential. We have a nervous system that has so much potential. And if you transcend and use that potential most fully, then you can achieve all the other goals in the hierarchy in a most effective way. So transcendence should be primary, and then the others happen. You know, if you want to build a building and you say, well, I have no time, I should start right away and put things up like that, and you forget about the foundation, then you are building a building that will crumble, that will not hold. Yeah. You know, for the tree to go high, it has to send its roots deep. So going deep within is not a waste of time. It's the foundation that allows you to achieve maximum in life.
Thank you so much, Dr. Nader, because I have always wondered what mindfulness is, because we often have conversation on mindfulness in the current generation, but consciousness takes it many steps forward when you're actually being in touch with yourself, no matter what activity you're engaging in. And it's a very interesting take on that. And when we're talking about consciousness, there is something else which I want to explore, which is one of your books about consciousness, and it is titled Consciousness is All There Is. And what do you imply by that? What do you imply by the fact that consciousness is all there is?
See, there are several different philosophical opinions about the ultimate reality of life. If ultimate reality is energy and physical material, then we have to explain how consciousness emerges from this material life. And so you can have a field of energy, then you have fluctuations of this field becoming elementary particles coming together. They create atoms coming together. They create molecules, and molecules coming together, they create cells and organs and the whole body, and then complexifying nervous system, and then consciousness arises. That has been often thought to be the case. And that is what we call a physicalist point of view, a materialist point of view. And some would say even consciousness doesn't exist, it's an illusion and all of that. There is a dualist point of view, which says, in fact, there are two things that are separate. One is spiritual, that is what we call consciousness and mind and feelings and spiritual life. And one is physical, our material existence, the physical existence. But the problem here is how they talk to each other, nobody knows. Consciousness is all there is in reversing the problem and saying that actually consciousness is primary, and not only primary, everything that appears as physical is only a manifestation in consciousness. And so consciousness now spreads around all fields of existence. So animals have consciousness. They are consciousness. Trees are consciousness. Different levels of consciousness. So we have to accept that consciousness is not just the prerogative or the thing of humans, but it's also the ultimate reality from which everything emerges and everything appears. Now, the problem is to explain how from a field that is non-material, non-physical, which is consciousness, how all this material universe emerges. Either you say it is only a Maya, which means an illusion, or you find the logic of explaining how this Maya actually feels so real, because, you know, you pinch me, I will cry, or I will just get revolted and ask you not to do it. And, you know, you have to eat, you have to live, you live your life in the physical so much. And that's what my book actually does. It takes the first step of saying consciousness is all there is, and now faces the challenge to explain how from consciousness all the physical universe emerges. So Consciousness is All There is very fundamental book in terms of seeking and understanding ultimate reality, but it has profound implications on how to live your life better, how to find meaning in your life, how to see if we do have actually freedom, to what extent we have freedom, to what extent we have determinism, that things are already determined, if there are laws and all of that. It talks about these fundamental existential questions and offers solutions and means to make life better and to make life successful for everyone, and also directs towards profound solutions in terms of climate change, in terms of artificial intelligence, in terms of genetic engineering, and all, even war and conflict, where they come from, how they emerge, why humans get so crazy as to do the wrong things and kill each other and cannot live together. So why all these things are there and how we can solve them from a very fundamental perspective, not just giving ideas and nice thoughts, but understanding the why of things, why things happen like that. Why do we have that? Why people do that? Why, you know, there is freedom? Why there is some law, some determinism? Why we have to be maybe good? Why we have to do the right things? What are the right things? From where the right things come? What makes a moral judgment? What is right? What is wrong? Under what circumstances? So these are very fundamental philosophical but very practical questions. And with transcendental meditation and the programs that we offer, we have a very practical solutions that go together with these theoretical understandings. Now, this knowledge has come originally from Shankara, from Advaita Vedanta. So it's not new to say that consciousness is all there is. This is something that's been already proclaimed in Upanishad and in, you know, Vedanta and Veda and all of that. But what is really new is the angle, the modern angle, the evidence, the supportive ideas and arguments that support this idea and explains it in a very systematic way and gives practical technologies to allow us to live a better life, not just philosophize about it.
It's beautiful. I'm really glad you brought this particular point of even animals having consciousness. This kind of takes me back to my childhood when I used to visit a small village called Palakkad in Kerala, where my grandfather, who used to narrate the stories of Ramayana. So every time we take a visit to a temple, he used to narrate me the stories. And it was so interesting to discover that there is a book written by you correlating the events of Ramayana with human physiology. Can we talk a bit about that?
Yes, beautiful. The idea was coming from Maharishi Mahesh Yogi, who has seen that the Vedas, all the Vedas, are expressions of the laws of nature. And so he asked me to see how all these laws of nature manifest actually in our human physiology. You know, in Veda, in Vedic literature, we say Vedoham, I am the Veda. Or Sarvam Kalvidam Brahm, Aham Brahmasmi, I am totality, I am wholeness. And in other religions, of course, is also mentioned, you know, humans were created in the image of God. That is in the Bible. The kingdom of heaven is within you, is also in teachings of different religions and all of that. And so that reality is not just a theory or an inspiration. And if the Vedas are themselves the expressions of the laws of nature, and if all the laws of nature are within us, then we should be able to find the correlation. That was Maharishi's beautiful insight. And he asked me to do research. And I have found that actually our human body is a blueprint, is actually an outcome of the blueprint, which is Veda and Vedic literature. So the suktas, the richas, their structure, how many they are, where they are, their functions are actually in our own human physiology. Not only Ramayana, but all the 40 aspects of Vedic literature. Nyaya, Vaisheshika, Samkhya, Yoga, Karma, Mimamsa, Vedanta, Shiksha, Kalpa, Vyakara, Nirukchan, Jyotish, etc. The Upanishad, Aranyakas, and all the Vedic literature, Ayurveda, Tapatya Ved, Hanurved, all are actually present in our body, including the devatas and their structure. Now, Ramayana is very special in the sense that the whole story of the Ramayana reflects the story of human development. How from childhood, the brain, the physical body actually develops, and how we can find all the story of the Ramayana in actual structures and their relations in our physiology. So you can find when Ram goes to meet a certain rishi, let's say at the beginning, goes to meet Vishwamitra, and Vishwamitra teaches Ram how to use the arrow and the bow, and then there are circumstances that are there, you know, there is a river, there is a sound, there is Rakshasi that comes, and then how to deal with all of that. All of these are developmental values that exist in our body. So there is a place in the body where there is Vishwamitra as a physical structure. There is a place where Ram is, and how Ram develops and goes through the story of Ramayana is how the brain develops and connects to the different parts of the body and, you know, the relationship between them and all of that. So, you know, Hanuman, for example, is the hormones in our nervous system. And that explains all what is about Hanuman, how Hanuman flies everywhere. So this is the hormones, they go everywhere. How Hanuman can become very tiny, very small, and go through under the door or whatever in any hole. And that is how the hormones actually go through holes on the cells and they create them. At the same time, if you take the whole hormones together, they are all permeating. They can fly like Hanuman flies. They can improve digestion or increase the fire like Hanuman can burn a city, can do something that is, you know, immune system and all of that, how it can remove negativity and adjust things. So these are small examples, but all the rishis, all the events of the Ramayana are actually stories that happen in everyone's human body.
Beautiful. I really love the example of Hanuman, because for me, the image of Hanuman is the one bringing the Sanjeevani mountain, you know, and now correlating that to what you said, it's interesting. It's the hormones we have. It's what is helping our body to function. It's basically the Sanjeevani, you know, to our body. Thank you so much for sharing that insight on that. And it really amazes me that this is a knowledge that has existed in our land since 1500 BC. And what kind of an effort has been put into curating them? And it's quite a marvel to understand that even there is a scientific angle to it, and it can be validated scientifically, because even when it comes to Ayurveda in our place, we call it the alternative medicine. We have never had a situation where we combine the modern medicine and Ayurveda, because it's called the alternative treatment. And throughout your life, you have tried to link the both. And I found that particular aspect to be very interesting.
Yes, this is inspired by Maharishi about the relationship between the physical and the non-physical, consciousness and its fluctuation and its laws and its dynamics, and the physical reality, and to find that they are the same. And this is one more argument. It's not the only argument, but this is one additional support to the idea that consciousness and the physical reality are actually an extension one of the other, that the physical is a manifestation of consciousness, an aspect of consciousness. And that is what I highlight, of course, in all the books, but particularly in the upcoming book, Consciousness is All There Is, which I hope your listeners and viewers will discuss, and we can have more discussions about it, and we'll be able to have it and read it, and I hear their opinion.
I look forward to reading that, and I look forward to also gifting a copy of this to my grandfather, who's still there, of the Ramayana, the book on human physiology, because I think it will really be interesting for him as well. So I'm so glad that you have written books that are so relevant and yet take a lot of instances from our marvelous literature that has been there for years, and it gives me so much pride and happiness to belong to the land which has given all this knowledge to the world. And these days we hear a lot of negative news. We hear a lot of on war, we hear a lot about problems that people are facing, and global peace, it feels like something which cannot be achieved in our time. Yet you feel so hopeful about that. And how do you think that we can head to a point of global peace?
War and peace, they are in the mind of people as a beginning. You know, the decision to go on to conflict and to fight is due to mental perception of who is the other, who am I, what is the reality of life. And it's also a reality of understanding what is the purpose of life, why we are here, you know, how we can deal with our situations. And if we start with a very materialist, physicalist perspective, not just in the sense of materialism, meaning economical materialism, but in a philosophical way, the understanding of the ultimate reality as being only physical and material leads to, you know, logics of behaving with each other and doing things in ways that are not so healthy, because there is no sense of responsibility, no sense of karma, no sense of higher values. What's the purpose of life? If it's all material, I can grab everything I can. Why not? What is the problem with that? Even at the cost of others and, you know, destroying even and killing and all of that. So there is a worldview, if you like, that promotes or ultimately indirectly leads to conflicts and problems. And there is a worldview that can lead to greater peace and harmony in society. And that worldview is a spiritual worldview. It's a spiritual meaning consciousness based on awareness and consciousness. And so I am hopeful, because as people start to understand what is consciousness, and that consciousness is primary, and that consciousness is all there is, they will accept the theory of what we are offering, but most importantly, the practice, the actual technology that will make a difference. So it's not just the theory. The theory is to convince people that it works and how it works, but the practice is the most important part. And this is how transcendental meditation and the advanced programs brought to light by Maharishi, the Transcendental Meditation Siddhi program and all what we call advanced techniques, have been shown practically to lead to changes in society that are very positive, that reduce conflict, and that make people more cooperative and think in a broader way and take into consideration not only human life, but also the environment and all aspects of life. And that is something that will happen, because there is no escape from it. As evolution grows, people will have to find what is true, as often said in India, Satyameva Jayate, that which is true will always triumph, will always come to be accepted. And so we have strong scientific documentation, scientific research that has been done by different organizations that have been peer-reviewed, which means reviewed by scientists who have nothing to do with it, just on an objective level, and that have been published in scientific journals that are very serious, that show when a group of people practice this program together, the transcendence program, transcendental meditation and its advanced techniques, that there is a real reduction in conflict and stoppage of war. And this has been done in many, many countries under many, many circumstances. So whenever you have the tool and you know it works, then you are hopeful. It's no more like a wishful thinking, but you know the system works. And the question is how soon it will be applied. But then you know it is there and you know it will be applied one day, because as people go round and round and round about other ways of doing things, one day they'll find that all the other ways are not working, and they'll find that this simple way, which is very effective, can make a big difference. So I'm extremely hopeful that with the rise in consciousness, and by rising and creating large groups of people who practice this program together, as we are endeavoring to do, and as we have now in India great connections with great leaders that want to do it, we will have the group that is large enough, and in this case, it is the square root of 1% of the population. In the world, it will be about 9,000 to 10,000 people. That's enough. Only that, doing their program together, will create a very profound difference as the program evolves and is maintained on a regular basis. So I have hope, based on scientific findings, based on proofs that have been done, based on theory, based on practice. So I feel absolutely hopeful that it's going to happen, and we hope it happens faster and the fastest possible way.
I'm so glad that we are ending this on a note of hope. And it's very reassuring to know from your end that, you know, there is hope. And I really hope that all of us can shed our identity or the petty identities that hold us back, and kind of be in touch with our inner consciousness and be there for other human beings and really emulate Vasudeva Kudumbakam. At the end of the day, that's what matters. We really have to be in peace. We really have to thrive. And I wish that the world would get better as each day goes by. Thank you so much, Dr. Tony Nader. It was a wonderful conversation. There is so much to converse with you. There are so many topics that we could explore. And I'm just glad that I got this opportunity by TAL Radio to speak to you, to talk to you a bit about consciousness. And our listeners would also be very happy to understand it a bit. And we'll try to read your book and try to have a bigger conversation on that. Until then, thank you so much for participating in this.
Thank you. It's been my joy. It's really beautiful. We look forward to having more conversations as time goes.
Thank you for tuning into Dr. Tony Nader, the podcast. And if you're interested in learning more from Dr. Nader, please follow him on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and YouTube.